I want to welcome everyone. This is Fit as a Fiddle Plus. I am Kathy Benner. I'm a passive income coach, but I firmly believe that health comes before wealth, because what good is it if you have all the money in the world and you have to spend it to try to get healthy? So what good is that? So health comes first. And so today we are with Rita Brewer and also Dr. Philip Ovadia, and we're going to chat all about health and wellness. So I have an actual international academy. And so for those of you that are listening, you can go to kathybenner.com. That'll take you right to my homepage. And quick and easy, scroll down the homepage until you come to the calendar. And that gives you all of our events. And if you click through on the calendar, you'll click through right into the Zoom codes or whatever event you want to participate in. It'll take you right to the event. So that's a quick and easy way to find us. We're going to be changing up our platform a little bit in January, but not necessarily the platform, but the time of day. So just follow the calendar to find us. And I want to turn it over to Rita for just a moment to tell us what she does and how folks can find her.
Hey, everyone. Glad to have you here with us. Again, I'm Rita Brewer. I have been a clinically practicing physician assistant for over 32 years in many specialties of medicine and surgery, but have really pivoted in the last 10 years to focus on preventative health and wellness, to help people get healthy and stop having to just prescribe prescription medications for chronic diseases that are actually preventable and reversible. So like our guest today, I specialize in metabolic health, and my passion is to help people reverse their type 2 diabetes, because most people don't know that this is actually a preventable and reversible condition. So I still practice as a physician assistant in lifestyle and obesity medicine, but I also have a private health coaching practice. So I can help people to, like I said, get as healthy as they possibly can and reverse their type 2 diabetes and all the other lifestyle related conditions like high blood pressure, cholesterol, you name it, acid reflux, the list goes on, preventing many types of cancers. So that is my passion and love, and that's why I'm so excited to share and introduce our guest today, Dr. Philip Ovadia, because he has a very similar passion, and we're going to get him introduced to you.
Well, thank you so much, Rita. Dr. Ovadia, I just want to start off by asking you to tell us a little bit about your backstory. I know that was all included in your bio, but it's such a great, interesting backstory that we'd like to hear you share that with our listeners.
Yeah, sure thing, Kathy. And it's great to be here with you and your audience. And thank you to Rita as well. And, you know, many people now know me as America's heart surgeon. And I have been a heart surgeon for over 20 years, have done over 3,000 heart surgeries. But during much of that time, I was a very unhealthy heart surgeon. I was morbidly obese. I was pre-diabetic. And I realized that I was going to end up on my own operating table. And I, like so many of my patients, didn't know how to change my path. I kind of thought that, you know, heart disease was inevitable. And, you know, the people who ended up on my table were sort of destined to be there. And we didn't have a whole lot of control over this because I was following the advice that I had learned to give. Eat less, move more, eat a low-fat diet. And I was recognizing it wasn't working for me and it wasn't working for my patients. Thankfully, I started to ask some different questions, come across some different information. And, you know, I came to the realization after fixing my own health problems that the vast majority of work that I did as a heart surgeon is preventable and should be preventable. And like Rita, I now focus on helping people how not to need heart surgery. I wrote my book, Stay Off My Operating Table, a few years ago. It's been an award-winning bestseller, and I am excited and passionate about keeping people off my operating table. And that's what we're here to discuss today.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about, in your backstory, about what brought you to that holistic lifestyle decision.
Yeah, like I said, it really was that realization that what we were doing in the medical system, the advice that I was giving my patients and the advice that I was following myself just wasn't working. And I had to start looking outside of my traditional medical training to find the answers about how I could overcome my own health challenges and how I could then help my patients to prevent the need for heart surgery. And that led me down a focus on, what we call metabolic health. Basically, changes that we can each make as our, as individuals, in our lifestyle, in the foods that we eat. And that is where the power lies to prevent things like heart disease and like many of the other chronic diseases that plague our society today.
What was your aha moment, Dr. Avedia?
Yeah, well, for me, it really came down to the fact of realizing that fat and cholesterol, what I had been taught to focus on as a heart surgeon, as a heart specialist, were not at the root cause of heart disease and not at the root cause of most of the other chronic diseases that end up contributing to heart disease, things like diabetes. And when I really came to realize it was processed food, sugar, highly refined carbohydrates, these were the foods that really are to blame for our epidemic of chronic illness today. And then that led me to the realization that the very recommendations that I had been giving to follow the food pyramid, to eat a low-fat diet, were pushing people to eat more and more of these highly processed foods that were actually causing the heart disease. That was really my aha moment.
Wow. Rita, I know, yeah. Same as me, we just traveled to Italy and back, and Rita did just recently. And boy, oh boy, is it hard to eat healthy when you're in an airport. Wow.
Well, I found Italy too. For me, there's so much high carbohydrate foods and I'm not used to eating that way anymore. And it was really difficult. I did not feel well at all. Like after I was only there, mm-hmm. It was 8 days total. And even I tried getting more fruits and vegetables, but it just wasn't as readily available on the menus when eating out. So I did not feel well afterwards at all. So yeah. I'm not sure how they do it. Well, they are very, very active there. They do walk a lot, but I was walking a lot too. But I just love Dr. Avedia, the fact that, you are pivoting in this direction and trying to teach people about preventative health and wellness. And actually, like you said, keeping people off of your operating room table, because there's very few surgeons that I have ever met. And I don't know about you and in your circle now that you've been doing this for a while, there are a lot of surgeons that are willing to pivot and work, move away from their conventional, training and their day-to-day that you've done for so many years to really pivot and, really focus on preventative health and wellness. And how are you doing that now? Being a full-time, I don't know if you're still working full-time, but as a heart surgeon, that is an extremely, that's three full-time jobs. It's like 24/7. Like how did you pivot and start you're working on coaching people now, right? So how are you doing all of that?
Yeah. So, I have found ways to integrate all of this into my very busy practice life. And I kind of, I guess you could say I lead almost a dual professional life these days, because I do still continue to work as a heart surgeon, but I have a preventative focused telemedicine practice. So I see people throughout the country and even internationally, and we do coaching and medical care as part of that practice to help them to stay off my operating table. And, what I've come to realize is this holistic approach has made me a better surgeon, because when people end up on my operating table now, I can have that conversation with them. And I can be honest with them and tell them that the surgery that I'm going to do, it's going to deal with the problem that's in front of us. It, depending on the situation, may save your life, may extend your life, may relieve your symptoms. But it's not addressing the reason that you need the surgery in the first place. And if we don't address that underlying root cause, you're going to be back. You're going to have more trouble related to your heart disease. And that's kind of the natural course of things that we see when we do heart surgery, is the vast majority of people that have heart surgery still end up dying of heart disease. We have extended their life. We have improved their life, but we haven't changed the underlying root cause. And now I can have that conversation with people. I can talk to them about the underlying root cause, and I can empower them to change what led to them needing the heart surgery in the first place.
That's awesome. I love that. Go ahead, Kathy. I see you got a question.
and again, I was looking through my notes because I read, Dr. Beatty, I read your bio, and I saw something in your bio about how things changed for you, and you said you owe it to your wife because back in 2015, you decided to try, or she started it first to avoid gluten. And so that was your first step in that direction of realizing, you know, about your food choices. Talk to us a little bit about that. And again, like Rita, I just came back from Italy. Everything is pasta and pizza.
Yeah.
And so I agree. I struggled as well to find, you know, I finally told Mark, I said, I got to have a salad. I got to find a place where I can order a salad. So talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I have even better suggestions for you. Go for the red meat. It's not harming your health. Eat nutrient-dense animal protein. And that's, you know, really what I advocate for people to do to help them eliminate and lessen that need, that desire that we all have for the carbohydrates. But yeah, this journey really did start with my wife, and she was struggling after having our children with really bad heartburn, and a practitioner of hers recommended that she go gluten-free. Quite frankly, at the time, being in that traditional mindset that Rita knows so well, I said, well, that doesn't really make any sense. You know, you don't have celiac disease. You shouldn't need to avoid gluten. But being the supportive husband that I was, I agreed to try it with her. And I noticed how much better I felt pretty quickly. Wasn't even about, you know, losing weight. It was just, I noticed I was less tired in the afternoon. I didn't have that kind of energy crash. And, you know, we sort of, because at that time, there weren't all of the gluten-free alternatives that are on the market today. So we basically kind of eliminated, you know, a large portion of our carbohydrates and unintentionally went low carb. And that kind of triggered my curiosity, and I started looking into it more. And fortuitously, you know, a few months after that, I was at a medical conference. Gary Taubes was the guest lecturer. At that time, he had just written the book, The Case Against Sugar, and before that had written Good Calories, Bad Calories. And so, Gary introduced a lot of these concepts to me, kind of solidified them, helped me to start to understand why going gluten-free was advantageous to people who weren't necessarily, didn't have celiac disease or gluten intolerance. And that really started me down the low carb pathway. And ultimately, that's now evolved to a primarily carnivorous diet for the past 4 years for me. And that's one of the main messages that I want people to understand. As a heart surgeon, as a specialist who has dealt with heart disease now for 20 years, I want people to understand that red meat is not the cause of heart disease, and we should not fear eating red meat. And it turns out that, you know, red meat is the most nutrient dense food that we can eat. It's the food that we as human beings evolved eating. And this whole push away from animal protein has really led us down a path that has worsened our health overall.
Yeah, now, that, of course, that is such a struggle to get that message across, isn't it? Right, because we've been so programmed, right, ever since this started back with, you know, Ansel Keys articles and, you know, things like that, pushing that meat is bad, and it's really hard to reverse the dialogue now, isn't it? To get people to understand that meat is not bad. It's just there's good quality meat and poor quality meat. But it's not, you know, what's causing all the problems and the high cholesterol and the heart disease. Sugar is the problem, and the garbage, the processed vegetable seed oils that, so much of our food is cooked in. So it's a tough dialogue to have, because it's so ingrained in people's heads now. Do you find that as well?
Yeah, definitely so. And we're in a situation where I have to tell people that you have to flip the food pyramid as you learned it, basically upside down. And you know, the very foods that we have that have been demonized for, you know, most of our lives are actually the foods that we should be eating in abundant quantities. And you know, I try and keep it simplistic for people, because it is very noisy out there, and you know, people will go on the internet and they'll find, you know, doctors and other healthcare practitioners pushing all sorts of diet and diet plans. And ultimately, you know, what I tried to do when I wrote Stay Off My Operating Table was to look at the commonalities, you know, all of these dietary approaches that seem to improve people's health, everything from a vegan to a carnivore diet, and lots of things in between, like keto, paleo, the Mediterranean diets that you hear about. You know, what do they have in common? And what they have in common is the elimination of processed food, prioritizing eating whole, real food, the things that grow in the ground and the things that eat the things that grow in the ground. And I tell people, you should be able to look at your food and know what it is and what's in it. And that's really the main issue that we are struggling with so much today, especially here in the U.S. Because, you know, you talk about going to Italy and, you know, that they eat a lot of pasta, but you look at the pasta that they eat and it's, you know, just flour and water and, you know, some salt and maybe some olive oil. And you pull a box of pasta off the shelf of the grocery store here in the U.S. and you see there's like 20 different ingredients, many of which we can't even pronounce, and we have no idea what they are. So if we just get back to eating whole, real food, that is really the biggest step that people can take. People can empower themselves to take back control of their health and change what they're eating. And, you know, like I said, just start there, real simple, and you'll notice dramatic effects.
Absolutely. And over there, they're not spraying all of their wheat products with, you know, glyphosate, you know, which is Roundup and other toxic chemicals. And our immune systems are just, freaking out, not knowing, you know, how to handle it all. So.
And that was the point I wanted to bring up, is that the quality of the food, you know, sometimes, you know, you feel you're eating the right stuff, but the quality isn't there. And sometimes it's hard to find the good quality foods. And especially if you eat out a lot. As Mark and I do, you know, we're retired, and sometimes it's easier to just go out and grab a bite than it is to cook something at home after a long day of whatever. And you have no control over the quality of the restaurant food. And because it costs more doesn't necessarily mean that it's better. It just means that maybe they know how to fix it to make it taste better, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the food itself is better. And so I find that I struggle with that all the time, is how do I know that what I am eating isn't full of some sort of pesticides or sprays or whatever, even the fruits and vegetables. And just recently, I have to tell a cute little story. I was shopping, and of course, you know, you always hear, oh, shop around the outside of the grocery store where you get all the fresh fruits and vegetables and all of that, instead of in the center where all the processed stuff is. So I'm shopping, and I see this gal spraying with a squeeze handle spray bottle, and she's spritzing all of the fruits and vegetables. And I said, "What are you spraying on there?" And she goes, "I don't know." I said, "You don't know?" And she said, "No." She goes, I'm just told to go out and spray all of the fruits and vegetables twice a day to keep them shiny. And so she put the bottle down and walked away. And so I took the opportunity to go over and I looked at, and there was no label on the bottle at all. I had no idea what was in. Now, my guess is this might have been an oil of some sort, a vegetable oil, who knows? But anyhow, whatever it was, she was spraying all the fruits and vegetables. And how many folks purchase that, take it home, cut it up and eat it, and they're not washing their fruits and vegetables first? So there's just all kinds of layers of good, better, and best.
toxins.
And, yes. And so my big problem is, how do we know? What are some tips and tricks so that we know that we're eating better?
Yeah. And, you know, it is difficult. You know, the closer you can get to the source of your food, the better off you're going to be. So, you know, if you have options to shop locally, go to the farmer's market, talk to the people who are raising your food, and, you know, have as few people in between the food being raised and you then can, you know, preparing it and consuming it, the better. In general, you know, like I said, the first rule is just stick to whole real food. And yes, you're right. You know, if you're going to the restaurant, you don't know, you know, what they may have cooked it in, what they may have put in the sauce. But, you know, you try and keep it as simple as possible. And this is another reason that I return to animal-based nutrition, because one of the magic things that ruminant animals can do, these are our red meat animals, is they can detoxify a lot of that stuff for us. The magic of having multiple stomachs is, you know, when they eat the grass or they eat the vegetables that maybe got sprayed with some of this stuff, they can detoxify a lot of that for us. And we can't. So when we eat the vegetables that are sprayed with the glyphosate, as Rita alluded to, that's going to our intestinal tract. That's going to set off autoimmune reactions, can cause things like leaky gut, and cause a whole host of problems. But when we let the cow do the work for us, and then we eat the cow, they have detoxified a lot of that stuff. And yeah, even when you get into the world of red meat, you know, there's lower quality and there's better quality. But the lowest quality red meat is still going to be better than any processed food that you're going to find in a box or in a bag in a supermarket. So, you know, my tip when I'm traveling and I eat out a lot is I pretty much stick to, you know, my carnivorous diet. I order some red meat and I ask them just to, you know, kind of grill it simply. Maybe I'll have a piece of seafood with it. If I'm going to have some vegetables, it's going to be, you know, just steam it and put some butter on it, something simple. You know, you try and control that as much as possible, and you avoid the dressings and the sauces that you don't know what's in them. And you just do the best you can to minimize your exposure to all this stuff. But the more that you're buying, you know, fresh whole food and preparing it yourself, the better off you're going to be ultimately.
I would love for you to just talk to people about the cholesterol issue with that, right? Because everybody thinks if I eat red meat, my cholesterol is going to go up. And because you do see a large volume of patients, I would love for you to share, what are you seeing with people when they do adopt these changes towards a carnivorous diet? What is going on with their cholesterol? I know for me, mine got better. And I see that in a lot of my patients as well.
Yeah. So there's a lot of misunderstanding, I think, when it comes to cholesterol. And, you know, the healthcare system, the medical system, and the way your doctor has been trained is oftentimes focused on one number, one type of cholesterol particle, cholesterol carrying particle, I should say, that's in our bloodstream. And we think that that is sort of a black and white issue. If that number goes up, it's bad. If that number goes down, it's good. But there's a lot of nuance that is lost in that. Understand that the relationship between, you know, our dietary fat and dietary cholesterol, how much we eat and how much ends up in our bloodstream, is very variable. There are some people who adopt low carbohydrate diets and they do see their cholesterol levels go up, their LDL cholesterol we're talking about specifically. And there are other people who don't see that. And like Rita said, sometimes it gets better. It goes down. Well, it goes down. I wouldn't necessarily equate that to getting better, because the nuance that we've lost is that it's not just the amount of cholesterol, it's also the quality of the cholesterol that's in your bloodstream. And I want people to understand cholesterol is vital to life. We could not exist without cholesterol. It literally makes up the walls of our cells, the structure of our cells. It is part of our immune system. It is a precursor to many of our vital hormones, like our sex hormones and our stress hormones. And so this concept that cholesterol is bad and it needs to be eliminated from our bodies is flawed to start with. You know, like I said, it gets very complex. There's a lot of nuance. And ultimately, this is a situation where I tell people you need to be working with a doctor who understands this, with a practitioner who understands this. You need to educate yourself. Don't just take what your doctor is telling you as face value, because the reality is, and I know this, having gone through medical school, having been a heart surgeon, going through all the training, is doctors get a very filtered view of the importance of cholesterol in our body. And all we are educated to understand is if your cholesterol in general, and specifically your LDL cholesterol is up, is higher, that's bad, and we need to lower it at all costs. And I'm here to tell you that it's much more complicated than that. And there are people with very low cholesterol levels who end up on my operating table. And there are people with very high cholesterol levels who have no evidence of heart disease. So you need a practitioner who can help you to understand this issue better. But I'm very confident in telling you that eating red meat is not harmful for your heart health.
Yeah. And do you focus on more of the triglyceride to HDL ratio with your patient population versus the LDL?
Yeah, so triglyceride to HDL ratio is an important metric to look at. It's part of the picture of understanding the quality of your cholesterol instead of just the amount of cholesterol that you have in your bloodstream. And triglyceride to HDL ratio really relates to something we call insulin resistance. And that is really what you want to get at. The true root cause, the biggest risk factor for the development of heart disease, is insulin resistance. And not only is it at the root cause of heart disease, but it's at the root cause of many of the other chronic diseases that we face. Things like diabetes, things like many forms of cancer, Alzheimer's disease. These are all related to insulin resistance. So ultimately, you want a practitioner like Rita, who's going to talk to you about insulin resistance and understand what that has to do with your overall health, and not just be focused on your cholesterol level, which is a very poor measure of your overall health.
I find it's hard to, sorry, Kathy, I don't want to get too like into the, cause like we could have like the whole medical conversation. I don't want to veer too much away from, you know, the lay public. But do you find like you run into any conflict between the cardiologists or the primary care doctors? Because often I see people who don't even have any documented heart disease, but they're on a statin and their cholesterol numbers are very low. And I try to say, well, can you talk to your primary care doctor or your cardiologist to see if they would be willing to reduce your statin a little bit? Because like you said, it's so important to have these cholesterol in our body for so many functions. But they're not always willing to back off on it, because I don't know what, I'm assuming it's because they just don't understand, you know, the importance of the cholesterol and in so many other areas of the bodies hormonally. Do you find any resistance with other practitioners in that area as well?
Yeah, certainly so. And I spend a lot of the time that I work with my patients, you know, this is a main focus of our work together. And the bottom line is, you're right, you know, their doctors don't understand the nuance of cholesterol. And, you know, that's really the big concern that I have around healthcare in general these days. But I just point to the evidence around us, you know, that this isn't working. We have been focused on cholesterol as the primary cause of heart disease for 70 years now. Cholesterol lowering medications have been the number one class of medications now for 30 years. And heart disease is not going away. It's getting worse. So that's what I point to. I just kind of say, look around you. Is what we're doing working? And I know I'm not satisfied with the results that my patients are getting from following this advice. And that's why I started looking for a different approach.
This is very interesting conversation. I want to circle back a little bit, and I know this is in Rita's wheelhouse as well, but I want to circle back a little bit to the insulin resistive. What are some things that a patient can do? And again, I know we discussed this with Rita on some other calls, but I want to just get it inserted, since we did bring up the topic, into this conversation for our listeners. What can some of the patients do to overcome that?
Yeah. So the first thing is you know, figuring out whether or not you have insulin resistance before you can figure out, you know, how to overcome it and if you need to reverse it. I give five simple measures that people can look at that can start to give you an indication about whether or not you're insulin resistant. And you can go to my website, ifixhearts.com. Right on the front page, there's a free quiz that people can take to figure out where they stand on their metabolic health. These five measures. Two of them you can check at home by yourself. Your waist circumference. So you just take the tape measure. You measure just above the level of your belly button. Do that first thing in the morning. And then your blood pressure. Your blood pressure, you can check it at home. You know, almost every pharmacy and grocery store these days has a kiosk that you can get it checked. And of course, every time you go to the doctor, you're going to get your blood pressure checked. And then there are three basic lab tests to look at. Two of them we already mentioned, your triglycerides and your HDL cholesterol, what your doctor will call good cholesterol. The final number you want to look at is your fasting blood glucose level. So the amount of sugar that's in your bloodstream when you haven't eaten for 8 to 12 hours. And you get those numbers, go to my website, plug them into the quiz. You can figure out if you're metabolically healthy or not. The scary statistic is that adults in the United States, the most recent data we have shows that 88%, so nearly 9 out of 10 adults in the United States, cannot meet those five measures of optimal metabolic health.
Wow. That's so shocking.
Very shocking. It's very shocking. And it explains why we have this pandemic that we're dealing with of metabolic disease, of heart disease, diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's disease, all of these things related to underlying poor metabolic health. And, you know, this became magnified the last couple of years, because one of the most consistent and earliest things we understood about COVID was that people who were not metabolically healthy, people who are insulin resistant, were more susceptible to get COVID and more susceptible to suffering bad effects, dying and getting real sick when they got COVID. So, you know, unfortunately, COVID was a huge missed opportunity for us as a society to focus on metabolic health. Because if the messaging at the beginning of COVID had been, let's get metabolically healthy, let's change what we're eating, let's change our activities, we could have come through that a lot better than we did.
Yeah, that was one of the aha moments for me when I decided, okay, I want to just coach people, you know, privately and be more effective than what I can do in the conventional model with just handing out prescriptions. When I learned those numbers, and like you said, it's almost, and now it's probably even higher than 80%, but 90% of the population is metabolically unhealthy. And this is something that is completely preventable and reversible. And, you know, it leads to all these chronic diseases that we're dealing with. It's high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, you know, the joint pains, the fatigue, the obesity epidemic. It's just insane. And the at least 11 different types of cancers are associated with obesity as well. So I'm so glad that, you know, Dr. Ovadia and many other practitioners, you know, we're working to try to like chip away, you know, at this, you know, huge epidemic. And he mentioned, you know, how big it is in the United States, but it's huge in other countries as well. And the Latin American countries and the Asian countries are suffering now. So we've got a lot of work to do, and it's unfortunate that our medical teaching in institutions and our community is just so far behind with this. So I'm wondering, Doc, you know, with all you've got going on, like, how do you even find the balance to be able to still work as a heart surgeon and do the coaching? And, you know, where do you put where's your self-care in there too? How do you balance it all?
Well, yeah, I do admit it's challenging, but, you know, because it's mission driven, because it's such a passion of mine, you find the time, you find the energy. I'm thankful I have a great team behind me. I have two amazing health coaches on my team. I have a whole, you know, behind the scenes staff that helps me run the practice and do all the stuff that goes into that. I also have my amazing family behind me. And so we find a way to make it all work. But more and more, the preference is not to be in the operating room, you know, to keep people off my operating table and to really bring this message worldwide. Like you said, Rita, this is not a problem that's limited to the United States. This is a worldwide issue. I was in the Middle East, in Dubai and Abu Dhabi a few weeks ago, talking to, government officials there and health officials there about, you know, the significant metabolic health problem that they have. And this is a worldwide issue, and we're going to need, you know, big changes really to tackle this. But I think, you know, I'm optimistic because I do see a lot more practitioners, that are focusing on this. I go to the conferences, I go to the meetings that are focused on metabolic health, low carb, keto, and I see more and more practitioners from all different specialties that are focusing on this and are, you know, kind of opting out of the traditional medical system because exactly what Rita said, you know, they don't want to just be writing prescriptions. They were drawn towards healthcare and towards medicine by a desire to actually help people. And I think they are recognizing that the current system isn't doing a great job of that, and we can do better and we should do better. And so, you know, that's part of the mission as well. It's not only about helping the patients, it's about helping my fellow practitioners to be more effective and to better help their patients as well.
I love that. I want to be on your team.
Well, and I just want to say this conversation does good for my heart, and I fully intend that pun. It does not only what I'm learning in the conversation, but just knowing that there are folks out there like you, Dr. Ovedia and Rita, that do care about your patients and that are working overtime to try to make this happen. Dr. Ovedia, if you could sum it up in one sentence, what is it that makes you mad about your industry?
Well, it's really that we've lost the focus on the patient. What I say about our current healthcare system is it works great for everyone except the patient and the practitioner. That's what really makes me mad, is that we've lost the focus on the patient.
And what is it that breaks your heart?
Just seeing all the unnecessary, really suffering and illness. You know, like I said, what I've now come to recognize is every patient that ends up on my operating table is a patient that the medical system has failed. We failed to help that patient when we should have helped that patient before they ended up on my operating table.
Absolutely. Just like we don't do anything to help a patient who's fasting blood sugar is just starting to climb a little bit, and we wait another year and we see it climb a little bit more, and then it's pre-diabetic, and we wait and we wait and we wait year after year until it finally becomes diabetic, in the diabetic range, and now we start diabetic medications and we just say, okay, we'll try to eat better and walk a little bit more. And that's it. You know, when we could have intervened, you know, 5 years before or 10 years before, you know, and made had a huge impact. But it's not being taught, right, Doc? It's not the, like you said, the practitioners were not being taught this. We've had to figure it out on ourselves and from our own experience. And that's where, you know, things really need to change, you know, too, with the medical system and the way we're being taught. But the thing that angers me too, which I think you danced around politely, but it's really, you know, a pharmaceutical driven medical system, and the healthcare system is driven by money and what they can have covered by insurance. And, you know, it's just crazy. And it breaks my heart as well.
But we're so ingrained in the system, the way it has been over the years. And it's actually taken, the system has taken on a life of its own. And, you know, and it's that, you know, that train is just rolling down the tracks. So when I know, Dr. Aveda, you have to work, you know, within the hospital system to do the surgeries. What kind of pushback are you seeing when, because I know that there's a whole team that comes together in a hospital setting, and what kind of pushback are you seeing when you're trying to help this patient?
Well, you know, it's, I would say it's not so much pushback as it is, you know, there's no infrastructure to support, you know, diet and lifestyle changes, to be quite honest. Yes, you know, I end up butting heads, I guess, with, you know, maybe some of the cardiologists or the primary care physicians about the cholesterol issue. But, you know, I guess, you know, the real unfortunate thing is, you know, we can argue about which diet might be the best dietary approach, but let's at least acknowledge that what we eat plays such an important role in our health outcomes. And that's another thing that has just largely been ignored by the healthcare system. We really don't even acknowledge that what we eat is what has caused most of the disease that we're treating. We think it's something else. It's genetics. It's a deficiency in pharmaceuticals, apparently, must be the reason that we get all these illnesses, because the answer is always prescribe another pharmaceutical. So that's really what our healthcare system has become. So I'm hoping at least to get that discussion going, and then we can talk about, you know, whether a low fat diet or a low carb diet might be better off. I think we know the answer to that pretty well when you actually look at the scientific literature, but, you know, at least if we're fighting about that, we've acknowledged that what the patient is eating is important.
How hard is it to convince the patients to change their lifestyle? And this question is for Dr. Avedia and for Rita. Do you find when you try to present a healthier lifestyle option, are the patients ready to receive that information, or is that a struggle?
Yeah, I find it really comes down to how you frame it. You know, when I talk to the patient, when I give them the option, and let's say it's a patient who's been, you know, recently diagnosed with diabetes, as Rita, you know, talked about earlier, and you say to that patient, I can start you on some medications, and over time, we're going to use more and more medications, and you're going to start to suffer more and more complications of your diabetes. Or we can change the way you eat, and we can reverse the diabetes. We can cure, essentially, the diabetes, and you won't need all of these medications for the rest of your life, and you won't have the side effects. You know, most of the patients say, sign me up, you know, tell me what to eat. But because we don't frame it like that, we usually just tell the patients, you know, the healthcare system usually tells the patients, don't worry about it. We have medications. They'll take care of it. You know, you can keep on living your life and just add these medications. You know, that's where you run into trouble. And then the other trouble we run into is when the healthcare system does give dietary advice, it tends to be lousy dietary advice. We tell people to eat low-fat diet, eat low-calorie diets. And these, quite frankly, are, you know, diets that don't work and aren't sustainable. And then so the healthcare system has kind of thrown its hands up and said, well, you see, people don't follow our advice, instead of saying, maybe we were giving lousy advice to start with. And, you know, like I said, when I tell people to eat whole real food, I tell them they can eat all the red meat they want. You know, they can eat all the vegetables they want. That actually turns out not to be that hard of a you know, dietary strategy to stick to. And people see the results and those become self-reinforcing.
Yeah. And when you eat that way, you don't have to count calories. Because right. Your body is getting all the nutrients that it needs and you're satiated a lot faster. So, yeah, you don't have to count calories. Nobody wants to do that. Well, for me, I'm lucky because I work at a clinic that is specifically lifestyle and obesity medicine. So the patients that are come, we're not a primary care office. So people, it's a specialty. So people who are coming to us, you know, want to change their lifestyle. They want to lose weight. They want to improve all of these metabolic conditions that we talked about. So they're already coming because they want to make those changes. So that helps a lot. But of course, there are people who take the information, they run with it and they do amazing. And then, of course, there's the other ones that are like, well, you know, I find one of the biggest things that I see is that, people want to lose weight, they want to improve all these things, but they're not willing to change the stressors in their life. They're overworked and overburdened with, you know, children, families, you know, work obligations, and the stress is just, you know, off the charts, and they don't understand that, you know, why they're struggling to, you know, reach their health goals. So that can be a big challenge. I have a lot of people who are, they're not willing to change, you know, their work-life balance. So they're going to struggle. So, you know, I hit a little bit of a, you know, brick wall with those, you know, situations, but I just keep reiterating it over and over again, that telling them that these are all important factors. It's not just the food and the physical activity, but the stress and the sleep and the toxins and loneliness, and, you know, all of these things, you know, play a big role, and we have to address them all.
Yeah, sometimes the problem I find, though, is a lot of those folks, they get the big picture on what they should be doing, but they don't know how to make that change. You know, it could be that financially, you know, they're again, I was on that hamster wheel for many years where financially they're working the two jobs, and you know, and then they're told, oh, well, you have too much stress and you're working too hard, and they're like, I don't know how to make that go away. I don't know how to fix that. And so that I find is always a big struggle when I'm working with my clients and coaching them, and that sometimes we have to just really go all the way down to the basics and say, you know, what do you want your life to look like? Let's just start there.
Yeah. And that's why health coaches are so great, because that's why I love doing health coaching. I like being a health coach more than I like being a PA, because I can spend more time with my mm-hmm. clients and really get into the nitty gritty of helping them create those strategies. And okay, well, let's work on that. How can we make this better? Because in conventional medicine, you don't have time. It's like 20 right. minutes in and out, and all your charting has to be done. And otherwise, you know, you're taking 2 hours of charts home at night. And you know, so.
Yep, I get it. And so what is the overarching solution to our medical, I'll say, system today? And how do we go about, I mean, I know we can all do it, you know, one patient at a time, but what is the overarching solution that needs to happen?
Well, you know, ultimately, I believe it comes down to patients and practitioners partnering to take back control of healthcare. We need to put the patient back at the center of healthcare. And, you know, from the patient perspective, it's really about empowerment. It's about understanding that each one of us does have the power to make these changes and to make this choice. You know, do you want a lifetime of kind of being trapped, you know, within the healthcare system, within the pharmaceutical-based healthcare system, getting sicker and sicker as we get older? Or do you want to live you know, that vibrant life that we all think about and dream about. And the answer, you know, the good news is that each of us has the power to do that. You know, we each are in control of what we put in our mouths, and what we eat is going to be the primary determinant of our health outcomes.
This has been an amazing conversation. I have learned so much. I appreciate both of you, Dr. Avedia. Thank you so much for being with us. And Rita, as usual, thank you for being my co-host. And Dr. Avedia, what are you working on currently? Anything new in the wings? Programs you're getting ready to launch or books you're getting ready to publish? Anything new that you have going on?
Yeah, lots of great things going on. Quite frankly, even I have a hard time keeping track. So I just encourage people to go to ifixhearts.com. You can find out all the ways that my team and I work with people to help them take back control of their health. The book is Stay Off My Operating Table, and it's a great place for people to start on this journey. And if you want to come find me over on social media, most active over on Twitter at iFixHearts. You can also find me on Instagram over there. I'm at Avedia Heart Health, and look forward to connecting with people and empowering them to take back control of their health.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on with us today. I know you're busy and I appreciate your time, and I especially appreciate your service and what you're doing to help make the world a better place. Thank you so much. And Rita, thank you so much for being on as well. And I can't wait to find out and hear more about what each of you are doing in the future. So thank you again for being with us.
Thank you so much for being here, Doc. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for everything you do, Rita. And thank you, Kathy, for letting me share with your amazing community.